May it please the court. Good morning. Jennifer Becknell-Guzzo of Saul Ewing on behalf of Plaintiff Below Appellant Bonanza Restaurant Company. With me is Eric Pinker of Lynn Tillotson Pinker & Cox of Dallas, Texas. Mr. Pinker has been admitted pro hac vice and will be arguing this morning on behalf of Bonanza.
Thank you. Welcome to the court.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. This is an appeal from a breach of contract action between a franchisor and the guarantor of four franchise restaurant locations. The guarantor had previously been the operator and franchisee for those same four locations and entered into the guarantee as part of a transaction pursuant to which he sold those four restaurants to a third party for consideration totaling $8 million. Less than a year after that underlying transaction closed, the new franchisees breached the franchise agreements by closing the store prior to the termination date or prior to the term of those agreements. Mr. Wink, we submit, similarly breached his consent agreement and guarantee by failing to live up to the terms of that document and to the performance obligations contained therein. Bonanza filed lawsuit against Mr. Wink, seeking lost profits resulting from the premature termination of the four franchise restaurant locations. The parties below filed cross motions for summary judgment on the issue of lost profits damages, and the court held that the guarantor was not obligated to pay lost profits damages, even though it recognized that those damages were inherent and necessarily part of the transaction, and recognized further that the franchisees had defaulted on the underlying franchise agreements. Now, this dispute, we submit, centers upon whether Bonanza, as the non-breaching party, is entitled to recover its lost profits, and whether the guarantee requires Mr. Wink to satisfy that obligation. In considering that legal issue, I submit that there are two basic facts that should govern the analysis. First, the new franchisees breached the franchise agreement within the first year, and those franchise agreements were consequently terminated. No dispute about that. Second, in exchange for being permitted to assign the restaurants to the new franchisees, Mr. Wink entered into four consent agreements pursuant to which he guaranteed, quote, all of the assignees' obligations under the new franchise agreements, end quote. That broad form unconditional guarantee included specific provisions in which he promised to, quote, comply with the terms and conditions of the new franchise agreement, and in which he further, quote, promised to, quote, pay Bonanza all monies due and payable to Bonanza under the terms and conditions of the new franchise agreement, end quote.
Could you help me out on one of the facts here? I thought that the guarantee was only good for 1 year. Is that correct?
We submit that that 1 year period, and there is a provision in the guarantee that talks about what we submit is a 1 year invocation period. In other words, the guarantee provided that it would be in effect for a period of 1 year's time, but the guarantee clearly by its terms applied to all, quote, all of the obligations of the underlying franchisees.
Okay, well, let me run this out so that I understand. The default termination, whatever, of the new franchisees happened shortly before 1 year ended, right?
Correct.
Okay. Let's assume for the moment that that had happened a day after 1 year. Would there be no obligation under the guarantee under those circumstances?
Had it occurred after the expiration of 1 year, then the answer would be yes. That was the negotiated result between those parties.
So if there were a the guarantee meant that Wink was going to stand in the shoes of the new franchisees forevermore if something happened in the first year?
With one caveat, Justice, and that's it would not be forevermore. The underlying franchise agreements had terms of between 5 and 8 years. Mr. Wink guaranteed, quote, all of the obligations of the franchisees under those agreements. And so he obligated that 5 to 8 year royalty stream. And stepping back, what Bonanza was entering into with this transaction was a new franchise agreement pursuant to which it was contracting for a 5 to 8 year revenue stream with the new franchisees. It was agreeing to allow Mr. Wink to excuse himself from his ongoing obligations under his existing franchise agreements, and it was further agreeing to consent to an assignment which was allowing Mr. Wink to monetize his investment to collect $8 million.
Okay,
and so
let me just run through a couple of scenarios. It's easier for me to understand that way. Let's assume that Wink did not assign these franchises, and that Wink defaulted and terminated and closed up all the businesses. What would your remedy be in terms of your entitlement to future lost profits for a closed franchise?
Well, if Mr. Wink had closed on November 6th, the date of the underlying transaction, the four underlying franchise agreements pursuant to which he was a direct party would have had some term remaining on them. And
I'm saying forget about the transfer.
Yes.
Okay? Let's assume that there's only you, Bonanza, and Mr. Wink.
Right.
And Mr. Wink still has X number of years left on his agreement, but he defaults, he terminates, he closes the business. What is your recovery under those circumstances?
Bonanza would have had a right to recover lost profits for the remaining term of the franchise agreement that it had between directly with Mr. Wink.
So the claim here is the same as it would have been if Mr. Wink had continued to be the franchisee and terminated the contracts at exactly the same time as they were terminated?
The claim would be the same, namely for breach of contract or lost profits damages. The duration of that claim or the term of that claim is different because as part of this assignment transaction...
Different terms were negotiated.
Precisely, Justice.
Okay, but conceptually the claim is identical.
Correct.
All right. Now your view is that the significance of the 1 year duration period of the franchise is that if the contracts, the franchises were terminated one day after the expiration of that 1 year period, then there would be no recovery at all against Mr. Wink. Is that right?
That is, and I recognize that.
Thank you. But if it happened one day before, then there would be a full recovery, and there would be no further significance to the one-year expiration date. Is that correct?
That's correct. And
okay, is that construction of the duration period disputed or undisputed? That is, does the other side have a different view about that?
Certainly, that is, I think, the central dispute in this appeal.
I thought the central dispute was whether lost profits were recoverable.
I think...
But there's a second dispute, and that is, even if lost profits are recoverable, the other side contends that they're recoverable only up to the end of the expiration of the one-year period.
Yes, and not wanting to state their arguments, but I think their claim is that lost profits are not recoverable pursuant to either the absence of any explicit provision providing for them in the contract or because of a waiver provision as it relates to consequential damages. But I'm sorry if I've lost.
All I was asking is whether that 1 year period cuts off all damages, even if your theory, that is your claim about lost profits, is correct.
I don't believe that it does. It is our position.
No, my question is that the contention of the other side,
yes,
as you understand it?
Yes.
Okay. What did the trial court hold on that issue?
The trial court, I believe, held that the guarantee was in place for only a year, And that is on pages 10 and 11 of the trial court's decision. It did not explain that that holding in any detail, but I believe that is a fair conclusion from the court's opinion.
Well, the trial court said in its opinion, future royalty fees are not provided for or mentioned anywhere in either the franchise agreements or the guarantees. The necessary conclusion is that Bonanza is not entitled to recover lost future royalty payments. What's wrong with that?
Under Texas law, which the parties selected for this transaction, the parties did not need to specify lost profits relief. That type of relief is mandated under Texas law, and so they are not required to identify all types of relief or recovery which are available to them. Texas law provides for the ability to recover lost profits damages, and we have cited to the court both the Hardy and the Meineke federal court decisions, Meineke being a Fourth Circuit decision, Hardy being an Eastern District of Missouri decision, both of which addressed virtually identical situations in which a franchisee breached a franchise agreement. The franchise agreement did not explicitly provide for future lost profits recoveries, and the courts held that the absence of a provision talking about lost future profits is not equivalent to a waiver of such damages, and in fact the governing state court law in those cases, the courts concluded, would support a lost profits, a future lost profits recovery.
Now, did those cases have a clause beginning with notwithstanding anything contained in this agreement?
They did not. They did not.
So is that significant or not?
I think obviously that is a distinguishing factor, and it is of significance, yes. And what I would urge the court to look at is not just that provision, of course, which is important, but also the provision that comes immediately following it. And if I could direct the court's attention to that, immediately following the one-year provision which we've been discussing, the contract further provides, if the guarantee period does not end prior to the expiration or termination of the franchise agreement, in other words, if the agreement is terminated within that one-year period of time as existed here, quote, Asinor's personal guarantee will survive beyond such expiration or termination, end quote. I submit to the court that that language makes clear that this one-year period is effectively akin to a limitations period. It's the period of time during which this guarantee obligation must be invoked or it lapses.
But you didn't finish the sentence. It then goes on, and will be subject to the assignee's post-termination obligations.
Yes, sir.
So post-termination obligations has a specific meaning under this contract, doesn't it?
I don't believe so. There is a post-termination obligations paragraph within the franchise agreement which articulates certain of the post-termination obligations, but under Texas law, that listing of certain obligations is not dispositive of all obligations. Texas law does provide for the recovery of lost profits damages in connection with a breach of contract, and the articulation of a handful of limited types of relief does not transplant or supersede the other forms of relief that are provided for under Texas law.
So when the trial judge says that Bonanza is a sophisticated party and if it wanted to recover lost future profits, it could have put that in, your response is they didn't have to because everybody knows in Texas that that's what you get.
Precisely.
So
precisely.
Texas law fills all the gaps unless you exclude them. Is that your view?
Yes, and I think it's stated much more articulately by the Meineke Court of Appeals, which dealt with this precise same fact pattern under North Carolina law.
Well, I'm sure that does express it more articulately than I did. I have a factual question. The judgment here was for somewhere north of $2,000, but not quite $3,000. And I infer, but I'm not quite certain that represented only the royalties that to the date of termination had not been paid.
That's correct.
Is that correct? On that basis, it would not seem to make any practical difference what the court ruled as far as the significance of the one-year guarantee period is concerned.
That's correct. That judgment stands separate and aside from what is being disputed here.
Okay.
And I apologize if my comment was misconstrued or not well stated. When I was referring to the Meineke articulately saying something, I was referring to my own comments.
I was just having a little fun.
Fair enough.
But the court, your view of the ruling of the court is that the 1 year guarantee period is more than a statute of limitations. It cuts off liability after 1 year. And therefore, for us to rule in favor of your client's position, we would have to overturn that ruling as well as the no consequential damages ruling.
Right. Well, the no consequential damages ruling by the trial court held that the no consequential damages waiver did not bar recovery here. So we are in agreement there. Our dispute and our appeal centers on number one. The trial court held that because...
Well, no lost profits, excuse me, however you characterize it.
Right. Well, the trial court held that because the contract did not contain a lost profits provision, we were not entitled to recover it. Okay. And our answer is Texas law permits us to. Secondarily, with regard to the one-year term, it is our provision that because we invoked our guarantee rights within that one-year period, we are entitled to enforce the obligation, and the obligation was, quote, all payments, which covers the 5 to 8 year period of time set forth.
So we would have both rulings to overturn as far as your client's position is concerned.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
You're into your rebuttal time, which you're welcome to use or not.
I will hold it, and I thank you.
Good morning, Justices. Edward McNally from the Morris James firm. With me is my colleague, Patricia Winston, who, of course, did all the work, but I get to make the argument. The appellant here is neither fair to the decision of the Superior Court nor fair to the wording of the documents they rely upon. And let me begin by just talking about how the Superior Court analyzed the issues here, particularly the issue of whether or not these future damages were recoverable. I think it logically began by the terms of Mr. Wink's guarantee, which is what we are really talking about here. And Mr. Wink's guarantee, as we all know, says that all of the language my friend has quoted from doesn't really apply, notwithstanding anything contained in this agreement, it says. That language doesn't count, and the guarantee is for a year. And then it goes on to say that the guarantee will survive beyond such expiration or termination. And by the way, termination is a term of art here. It's not the same thing as a default.
Because termination of the contract, right?
Yes, sir. And it goes on to say it will be subject to the assignee's post-termination obligations. Now, what does that mean? The Superior Court quite logically then turned to the franchise agreement's definition of post-termination obligations. And those are set out in the appendix beginning on page A122. And by the way, it's not just a paragraph. It's a whole section. And the section says obligations upon termination. It goes on to say that there are several obligations which clearly under the language I just read from the guarantee survive the one-year period. The obligation, for example, not to use copyrights or licensed trademarks. The obligation not to compete. Those are obligations which, by their terms, survive a one-year period. Now, the Superior Court first, however, began with the language in the agreement, in the post termination provisions, which is in section 18A, called payments of amounts owed to franchisor. And it focused on the fact that that language talks about the amount that was owed at the time of termination, which is the amount of the judgment in this case. And it pointed out that the word owed means amounts that had accrued as of that date. And that is exactly, by the way, what the Meineke Court concluded, construing substantially the same language, that such a paragraph only applies to the amounts owed up to the date of termination. So both the Meineke Court and the court below here agree that that's what it means. The court then logically Superior Court then logically turned to the other post-termination provisions and focused on the so-called continuing obligations provision. Now, the continuing obligations provision, of course, becomes important because of the way the wording, the way the guarantee is worded, which speaks of guaranteeing, you know, and such obligations post in the contracts post-termination. It calls those post-termination obligations. That's what Mr. Wink guaranteed. Now, what are those post-termination obligations, the lower court naturally said? And it went to paragraph 18D, which is entitled Continuing Obligations. And as the court below pointed out, paragraph 18D says that the obligations which expressly or by their nature are to survive or intended to survive the termination of this obligation are continuing. What are those obligations? They are among the things I just mentioned. Can't use the copyright, can't compete, can't use trade secrets. And again, I think my colleagues like to refer to the Meineke decision. What does the Meineke decision say about the continuing obligations paragraph in such a franchise agreement? It says, although the right to royalties and advertising fund contributions do not expressly survive the expiration or termination of the agreement as a provision of the contract, the Meineke court was focusing on exactly this language and says this contractual language does not impose an obligation that continues. Now, as a result, it seems to us that the plain meaning and what the court below held is that the post-termination obligations do not say that he's entitled, as Mr. Wink is obligated, to future franchise fees. It's just not there.
Well, I suspect that Mr. Pinker would respond that may be the result under Delaware law, but not in Texas.
I don't see why it's not the result under Texas law, because what we're talking about is construing the guarantee. Mr. Wink's obligations are set out in that guarantee, the way they worded it. Those are what he was obligated to. If there is a common law damage claim under Texas law for future royalties, that's all well and good. That's nothing to do with what Mr. Wink's guarantee speaks to. Mr. Wink's guarantee says you're obligated to what's in that contract, not what's in the common law of Texas. Let me
focus on some language here that maybe is fully explained, but not so far to me. Under Section 18D, the obligations under this agreement, and this is the continuing obligations, right?
Yes, Justice.
Which expressly or by their nature are to survive or are intended to survive the termination of this agreement. When it says intended to survive, doesn't that get us to finding out what the parties had in mind?
Yes.
And how do we do that?
You look at the language that they used.
Well, that tells me that whatever they intended is going to survive. Now, how do I know what they intended?
Well, I think to begin with, you would go back to the guarantee and you would look at the language that says, notwithstanding.
Okay, all right, wait. Let me back up because we're on different tracks here. As I understood the way this argument progresses, it is that the guarantor agreed to undertake the obligations that the assignees had under their franchise agreements, right?
For a year.
Okay. And if that obligation arose because the termination happened within a year, then we turn around and we look and look at the franchise agreements themselves, not the guarantee agreement, but the franchise agreements, and see what the franchisees had to do, right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
and,
ma'am.
And Section 18D is a provision in the franchisees agreement, right?
Yes, Justice.
Okay, so now forget about the fact that there was a guarantee. Let's just look at what does this franchise agreement provide, and I look at this paragraph or clause or whatever, and I say where it says the obligations that are intended to survive, and my first reaction is, okay, what are they? And how do I know what the answer is to that?
You know what the answer to that is by looking at the language that the parties used, because this is not a case where there is extrinsic evidence. The drafter of these documents is dead. Mr. Wink has no recollection of any negotiations in his deposition other than the fact he thought it was for a year. So you go to the language that they used, that's a sophisticated party used here, and you first look at 18A, which talks about a payment some amounts owed. Now, we know that that is goes backwards in a sense, and that's what the Meineke Court said. So, now, if they focused on the, what the payments were owed is what had to be paid by Wink upon termination, if they intended he also had to pay $1.6 million more in future royalty fees, would that not be in here? I think the answer to that is inescapably, of course it would have been in here had they intended that. Then you go further, and you look at what obligations do they intend. It talks about that. They say the license marks, the trademarks, the confidential information, don't compete. That's what the parties intended, and there is no language that they ever intended to include 8 more years of franchise fees based upon a calculation of royalties for a closed down restaurant. Let's think about what they intended. What did they foresee when they saw this, when they signed this contract? Did they foresee that Mr. Wink signing this 1 year guarantee would suddenly, upon termination, and termination, as I said, is a term of art because it means all obligations under the agreement, except those that are continuing, end? Did he foresee that he would be obligated to $1.6 million in future royalty fees? I dare say that's, of course not.
Well, let me interrupt you there. Let's, again, go back to the original. And Mr. Wink had a franchise agreement that had several more years on it, right?
Yes.
At the point at which it was assigned. And let's assume that Mr. Wink defaulted and terminated the agreement. Under his original franchise agreement, which I assume was the same kind of language as in the agreements with the assignees. So if he had defaulted and that agreement had been terminated, I assume Bonanza would be saying, okay, you owe us royalties for the remaining term of your franchise agreement, right?
That's what they would be saying.
Okay. And because we now know that's what they would be saying, and that the other side would be saying, well, doesn't say anything like that in here, can't we look to other instances of franchise agreements and see whether, as a general rule, you go and get lost profits till the end of the term or not?
Not in this case, because it's cut off by the contract. If Mr. Wink had his franchise, when he was operating these restaurants, he was the man in the kitchen.
Right.
After he sold these restaurants, he's no longer the man in the kitchen. His fundamental relationship to the parties has changed. Now, sure, he was a guarantor. But is it foreseeable on his part that under the notwithstanding language, and that's the key word, notwithstanding, everything else doesn't count as what notwithstanding means here, that he has a one-year guarantee that he would be obligated for 8 more years of franchise fees?
Well, what is it? Foreseeable that he would be obligated for 1 year of franchise fees?
Yes.
And all of that is included within, and it was unpaid, was included in the damage award?
Yes. Unfortunately for, I guess in some respects, the restaurants operated till virtually the eve of the 1 year expiration period. The amount of the damages represents the revenues of the restaurant up to the date it ceased to operate times the percentage franchise fee, which Mr. Wink is obligated to pay.
That was the $2,700 or whatever the dollar amount was.
That's right, Justice Jacobs. That's correct.
So it's really unnecessary then to address whether Texas law allows lost profits, even if they're not expressly mentioned, because under your view, even when they're included, they were what was due up to a year was paid.
Justice Allen, that's correct. I think it's all this. As if I don't know better. I don't know what happened to me. It must have been a product of my age, I guess. But I apologize. That's right. Now, with and that really is the heart of my argument here. I mean, there isn't much more that I need to say.
All right. I'm having a little bit of trouble with this. If a franchisor enters into a franchise agreement, those tend to be relatively long-term, right? You know, more than a year or two, maybe 5 to 10 years, something like that.
Sure, there's a capital investment that has to be made so that on the part of the franchisee, he doesn't want to build a restaurant and have it yanked out from under him, so that's right.
Right. But by the same token, the franchisor is allocating to this particular location the franchisee's right to sell the product, and they intend or expect to get profits from it. What I'm concerned about is this. If in a normal franchise relationship having nothing to do with the guarantee, the franchisee walked away after, say, 6 months, and it was a 10-year franchise agreement, you're basically telling the court that, well, all they would get is whatever hadn't been paid up to the 6 months of outstanding royalties or lost profits, and the other thing they would get is that for the rest of the term, you can't compete with them and you can't use their copyright and things like that. But that there would be no damages for the fact that you had a 10-year agreement that ended after 6 months and the franchisee just walked away.
That's a function. Justice Berger, I'll take it head on. That's my argument.
Okay.
Now, if they want it, they should put it in there. That's a function of termination. Upon termination, Bonanza could have put a Bonanza restaurant right next door the next day. That's why termination is so important here. And they supply the definition of the remedies on termination in the agreement that they wrote.
The investment that was made here in the buildings were by the original franchisee, Mr. Wink, is that correct?
Justice James, not correct.
The franchisor. So there were, you know, Bonanza did not have a dollar one invested in the physical plan, correct?
That is
almost
entirely correct. That's right. I mean, certainly they provided some training and they put their right out of pocket some.
Not in the bricks and mortar, the development.
Correct.
Okay. And I gather that investment was what was monetized when Mr. Wink sold those franchises to the new franchisees.
That's correct.
He at least got his investment back, and so the new franchisees were basically out of pocket as far as that was concerned.
Well, they were out of pocket. Of course, there's a lot of borrowing in these franchises.
So what I'm driving at is that the way the contract was drafted, or the contracts were drafted, might have been quite different if there had been a significant capital investment made by the franchisor in those buildings.
Justice Jacobs, I am sure that is 100% correct, because they have no risk upon termination. They can go ahead and start put a new Bonanza restaurant right in there and start all over again. And indeed, think about the termination provisions. You can't compete. You can't use our confidential information. You can't use our trademark. Why is that important? Because we're going to put another restaurant in there. And so it's not like, Justice Berger, that this poor Bonanza restaurant people are somehow lost a lot of money on this. They simply did not. And so under those circumstances, I think that it's fair, as the Superior Court judge did, to place upon them the obligation to write a franchise agreement that is clear. And certainly it's their obligation upon charging Mr. Wink for the right to assign the restaurants to provide a guarantee that makes it clear to him that he is now suddenly on the hook for over $1.5 million, according to them, if there's a default. And they didn't do that. Now, in our brief, we've talked about consequential and speculative damages. I'll briefly touch upon that because I don't want the court to think that I waived it. There's a lot of argument both before the Superior Court and in the papers as to whether these future damages are consequential or actual. We say that under the Cherokee case, under Texas law, it could be construed as both ways. Now, what do they say in the agreement? They said, to the fullest extent permitted by law, we waive these damages. We only want actual damages. And the actual damages were the damages, the royalty fees that they weren't paid. And under those circumstances, that's the way this agreement should be read.
In other words, actual damages are out-of-pocket damages.
It's not out-of-pocket, but it's what they weren't paid because of...
Well, actually obligated to pay.
Correct.
As of a...
Justice Jacobs, that's how I would have said it if I'd spoken clearly. Your Honors, that's a level I really have to say. Well,
Thank you.
May it please the Court. I think it would be helpful to understand and spend just a moment talking about the underlying transaction. Mr. Wink had been operating these restaurants for a period of well in excess of 10 years. The restaurants were very, very successful. He had a clear provision that stated he was not entitled to sell, transfer, or sign those restaurants without Bonanza's consent. And that's the situation that existed on November 5th, the day before the transaction. On November 6th, the transaction occurred, and what happened is Bonanza provided its consent. Mr. Wink got two things out of that. He, number one, avoided his remaining obligations under his own franchise agreements, the obligation to continue operating restaurants, paying royalties, paying advertising, et cetera, so forth. And the second thing he got was $8 million paid to him by the purchaser. And we know that the two contracts are in the record and they were attached to the consent form. So what did Bonanza get out of that transaction? They lost an operator with whom they had great familiarity, great respect, and who had been extraordinarily successful. What Bonanza got out of that, because again, if Mr. Wink had simply shut the restaurant down, Bonanza could have entered into a new franchise agreement with those people directly. So what did Bonanza get in exchange for that consent? It got a guarantee from Mr. Wink. It got a guarantee from Mr. Wink for, quote, all obligations. And again, all obligations refers to, I submit, the 5 to 8 year life of the underlying franchise agreements. That is what Bonanza was seeking to accomplish through that transaction, a 5 to 8 year stream of royalty income. And the 1 year provision, I submit, was included as a negotiated compromise akin to a shorter limitations period
That is what Bonanza intended to achieve the guarantee agreement. It would have been very simple to make it to state clearly that lost profits for the balance of the contract term with the new franchisees would be included as part of actual damages, but that isn't what occurred.
There's nothing explicit in the agreement about lost profits damages. Your Honor's correct. And I think what you would find is that is the situation in most franchise agreements. That being said, it's discussed in both the Meineke and Hardy cases, which we've cited at length to the court. I would also refer back to footnote 5 of the Superior Court's decision, which states courts generally agree that a franchisor may recover lost future royalties when a franchisee terminates the franchise relationship. So I submit that while the agreement does not have an explicit provision, the great weight of authority provides that franchisors are entitled to recover their lost royalty stream.
Even if there is no explicit provision?
I submit so, yes, Your Honor. And the footnote cites to a law review article that will contain those provisions. The Hardy and the Meineke decisions both contain the language of the underlying franchise agreement. And in that case, both of those underlying franchise agreements did not have future lost profits provisions similar to the situation here, and the courts relied on the basic law of contract, which is to say a non-breaching party is entitled to the benefit of the bargain.
By obligations, as used in the guarantee, includes, in your view, lost profits.
It does.
And so if we substitute the words lost profits for obligations, it would read, Bonanza agrees that Wink's obligation to pay lost profits under the personal guarantee shall be limited to a period of 1 year. So why doesn't that mean 1 year of lost profits?
Because I believe that number one, The obligation relates to all obligations, which includes the 5 to 8 year term. And then number two, the next sentence provides that in situations where the guarantee period is invoked, meaning the contract's terminated within that first year, then, quote, the personal guarantee will survive beyond such expiration or termination and be subject to the assignee's post-termination obligations. So again, I think there's two specific provisions. One, defining the scope of the guarantee to be all, and two, providing explicitly that in situations like this, the guarantee will survive beyond, and survive, I submit, for the life of the contract.
Your time is up, but I have one more question for you. Bonanza has franchise agreements with other parties, right?
Yes.
And I'm sure at some point in time, other parties have terminated, breached, walked away from the agreement. Has Bonanza recovered lost profits for the remaining term of those agreements? And if so, do you have anything in the record to show that?
There is nothing in the record that speaks to that one way or the other, Justice Berger.
And you don't know the answer?
I do not.
Thank you. We'll take this matter under advisement and take a recess. Thank you.